Hello, and welcome to Poetry Corner. This is volunteer reader Maya Abella for Sun Sounds. On today's show, I'll be reading a selection of poems from a collection entitled African American Poetry, 250 Years of Struggle and Song, edited by Kevin Young. It is a collection from the Library of America Anthology. First, I'll be reading a selection from The Introduction by Kevin Young. For more than 250 years, African Americans have written and recited and published poetry about beauty and injustice, muses and music, Africa and America, freedoms and foodways, Harlem and history, funk and opera, boredom and longing, jazz and joy. They wrote about what they saw around them and also what they dreamt up, even if it was a dream deferred, derailed, or flat out denied. In sonnets and anthems, odes and epics, Black poets in the Americas confronted violence and indifference, legal barriers to reading and writing, illegal suppression of voting rights, and outright threats to their personhood, livelihood, and neighborhoods. They wrote from a world they made, and a world that, at times, seemed designed to distract at best, to diss or destroy at worst. For African Americans, the very act of composing poetry proves a form of protest. In this profound work, they were participating in a long line of creation, spanning back to the enslaved Black and unknown bards of the Negro spirituals, who transformed traditions and invented language to describe and change their conditions, and to take pleasure and power in their own inventiveness. African American Poetry, 250 Years of Struggle and Song, captures a quarter millennium of Black poetry in the Americas, from Phyllis Wheatley to the present day. Whether we consider that time span to consist of what June Jordan calls the difficult miracle of Black poetry in America, what Amiri Baraka names the changing same, or the pleasure that Toy Derricotte invokes when she says, joy is an act of resistance. This anthology provides a comprehensive look at the centuries of song and struggle that make up African American verse, a legacy that is fruitful and large enough to barely be represented by one volume. This first poem is by poet Phyllis Wheatley, and it's entitled On Imagination. Thy various works, imperial queen, we see, how bright their forms, how decked with pomp by thee, thy wondrous acts in beauteous order stand, and all attest how potent is thine hand. From Halcyon's refulgent heights attend, ye sacred choir, and my attempts befriend, to tell her glories with a fateful tongue. Ye blooming graces, triumph in my song. To tell her glories with a faithful tongue, ye blooming graces, triumph in my song. Now here, now there, the roving fancy flies, till some loved object strikes her wandering eyes, whose silken fetters all the senses bind, and soft captivity involves the mind. Imagination! Who can sing thy force, or who describe the swiftness of thy course, soaring through air to find the bright abode, thy imperial palace of a thundering god? We on thy pinions can surpass the wind, and leave the rolling universe behind. From star to star, the mental optics rove, measure the skies, and range the realms above. There in one view we grasp the mighty whole, or with new worlds amaze thy unbounded soul. Though winter frowns to fancy's ruptured eyes, the fields may flourish and gay scenes arise, the frozen deeps may break their iron bands, and bid their waters murmur o'er the sands. Fair Flora may resume her fragrant reign, and with her flowery riches deck the plain. Sylvanus may diffuse his honors round, and all the forest may with leaves be crowned. Showers may descend, and dews their gems disclose, and nectar sparkle on the blooming rose. Such is thy power, nor are thine orders vain, O thou the leader of the mental train. In full perfection all thy works are wrought, and thine the scepter o'er the realms of thought. Before thy throne the subject passions bow, of subject passions sovereign ruler thou. At thy command joy rushes on the heart, and through the glowing veins the spirits dart. Fancy might now her silken pinions try to rise from earth and sweep thy expanse on high. From Tithian's bed now might Aurora rise, her cheeks all glowing with celestial dyes, while a pure stream of light o'erflows the skies. The monarch of the day I might behold, and all the mountains tipped with radiant gold. But I reluctant leave the pleasing views, which fancy dresses to delight the muse. Winter austere forbids me to aspire, and northern tempests damp the rising fire. They chill the tides of fancy's flowing sea. Cease then, my song, cease the unequal lie. This next poem is by poet Charles L. Reason. It is called Hope and Confidence. What a strange thing is the human heart, with its youth and its joy and fear. It dotes upon creatures that daydreams impart. Full sorely it grieves for when their beauties depart, and weeps bitter tears over their bier. The various gloamings that dart into birth reveal to its being of light the dimliest shadows that flit upon the earth, allure it with promise of pleasure and mirth in a country where never is night. It leaves the sure things of its own real home to pursue the mere phantoms of thought, well knowing that certain there soon must come an end to the visions that so gladsome it bewildered has eagerly sought. It fleeth the wholesome prose of life with its riches all sure and told, and scorning the beauties that calmly in strife truth fashions, it longs for the things all rife with glitter and color and gold. It buildeth its home neath an ever calm sky, near streams wherein crown jewels sleep, and there it reposeth, while soothingly nigh some loved one, perchance, doth most wooingly sigh, as the zephyrs all full laden creep. Thus it musingly wasteth in strength, in dreams of bliss that can never prove true, and ever it reveals amid what seems a paradise smiling with hope's warm beams, and flowers all spangled with dew. But even as flowers are broken and fade, and yield up their perfumes, their souls, so vanish the colors of which dreams are made, so perish the structures on which hope is stayed, and the treasures to which the heart holds. In vain does it follow the wandering forms that promise yet always recede. Too briefly the sunshine is darkened by storms. Hope minstrels it onward, yet never informs of the dangers unseen that impede. The heart trusts the outward, of man 'tis the whole. Thus confidence clings to decay. It feels the sweet homage that riches control, and laughs in contempt at the wealth of the soul. And behold, now friends wait for their prey. It trusteth in glory and beauty and youth, in love vows that ne'er are to die. But soon the death king, in whose heart is no truth, enfolds it, and mounting aloft of truth, thus sings, as turns glassy the eye. There's nothing so lovely and bright below as the shapes of the purified mind, not sure to which the weak heart can grow, on which it can rest as it onward doth go, than the truth which its own tendrils bind. Yes, truth opes within a pure suntide of bliss and shows in its ever-calm flood a transcript of regions where no darkness is, where hope its conceptions may realize and confidence sleep in the good. This poem is from poet Amiri Baraka, and it's entitled The Liar. What I thought was love in me, I find a thousand instances as fear of the tree's shadow winding around the chair, a distant music of frozen birds rattling in the cold. Wherever I go to claim my flesh, there are entrances of spirit, and even its comforts are hideous uses I strain to understand. Though I am a man who is loud on the birth of his ways, publicly redefining each change in my soul as if I had predicted them and profited biblically, even though their chanting weight erased familiarity from my face. A question, I think, an answer, whatever sits, counting the minutes till you die. When they say, it is Roy who is dead, I wonder, who will they mean? This next poem is by poet Kamau Braithwaite, and it's entitled Blues, and is a poem divided into several parts. 1. Basie. Hunched, humpback, gigantic, the pianist presides above the rumpus. His fingers clutch the chords. Dissonance and discord vie and vamp across the keyboard. His big feet beat the beat until the whole joint rocks. It is not romantic, but a subtle fingering exudes a sweet exotic fragrance now and then. You'll recognize the odor if you listen well. This flower blooms and blossoms till the brash boogie-woogie hordes come, burgeoning up from hell, blind and gigantic. 2. Klook. The drummer is thin and has been a failure at every trade but this, but here he is the king of the cats. It is he who kills them sick, sad, and subtle from his throne of skin and cymbal. He controls the jumping rumble using simple shock and cymbal. His quick sticks clip and tap tattoo, a trick or two that leaves you prancing and reveals that perfect quattrocento pattern. Giotto, Giangiao, Chano Pozzo, Klook. 3. Miles. He grows dizzy with altitude. The sun blares. He hears only the brass of his own mood. If he could fly, he would be an eagle. He would see how the land lies softly in contours, how the fields lie striped, how the houses fit into the valleys. He would see cloud lying on water, moving like the hulls of great ships over the land. But he is only a cock. He sees nothing, cares nothing. He reaches to the sky with his head closed, his neck bulging. Imagination topples through the sunlight like a shining stone. 4. Train. Propped against the crowded bar, he pours into the curved and silver horn his old unhappy longing for a home. The dancers twist and turn. He leans and wishes he could burn his memories to ash like some old notorious emperor of Rome. But no stars blazed across the sky when he was born. No wise men found his hovel, this crowded bar where dancers twist and turn, holds all the fame and recognition he will ever earn on earth or heaven. He leans against the bar and pours his old unhappy longing into the saxophone. 5. So long, Charlie Parker. The night before he died, the bird walked on and played his heart out. Notes fell like figure-forming pebbles in a pond. He was angry, and we knew he wept to know his time had come so soon. So little had been done, so little time to do it in. He wished to hold the night from burning all time long, but time is short, and life is short, and breath is short. And so he slowed and slurred and stopped, his fingers fixed upon a minor key, then slipped. His bright eyes blazed and bulged against the death in him, then knocking at the door. He watched, as one will watch a great clock striking time from a great blooming midnight bell, the silence slowly throbbing in behind the dying bell. The night before he died, the bird walked on through fear, through faith, through frenzy that he tried to hide, but could not stop that bell. 6. Bass. Bassie the bassist loves his lady, hugs her to him like a baby, plucks her, chucks her, makes her boom, waltz or tango, bop or shango, watch them walk or do the dango. Bassie and his lovely lady, Bassie and his lovely lady, like the light and not the shady, bit by boom they build from duty, humming strings and throbbing beauty, beat by boom they build this beauty, Bassie and his lovely lady. This next poem is another by Kamau Braithwaite, entitled Sam Lord. The Lord is my shepherd. He created my black-belly sheep. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures where the spiders sleep. He leadeth me beside the still waters, lakes, green pond, Constitution River, Glitter Bay. He leadeth me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake, though I am dry as a cracked sculpture's mold. He restoreth my soul. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, gully root, lime grove, lignum vitae, I will fear no eye evil, for thou art with me. Ragged point at dream's morning, Oyston town dripping to dust, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Candle, book of confectory that I will proudly bear, bell that I will break and pour its sound into the veve, bread nut, casket of my mother, plantain, mortar, slave song, and the grapefruit which is life, which is love, which is death, which is resurrection. Skin of fire, pith of innocent air, pulp of flesh of freshest clear, gold volcano, seed of earth, thou anointest my head with oil, hallelujah. Thy rod and thy staff no longer assault me. My cup of hands runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy, Francina and faith, shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the merchant for never. This next poem is by poet Jane Cortez, and it's entitled Orisha. Across the flesh and feeling of soledad, tornadoes of blackness, patois in its beauty, in its luminous fuchsia Lagos nights, ruby darkness, crisscrossing in front of the music, in front of my pigeon-toed solitude, another bush of praise, another battleground for accents, insurrecting against brainwash and breakdowns, white bucks and famished lyrics, spellbound and peg-legged on cartridges of gunpowder teeth, windpipes of burgundy lands, burning veins of respect forward into the blues, into pulsating ear of my cobra skin heart immense, in its infancy, of these few words. Orisha, Orisha, Satchmo, Orisha. This poem is by poet Sarah Webster Fabio, and it's called I Would Be For You, Rain. I would be for you, rain, yet might bring into your life again the storm, Summer days exact their dues. Troubled skies bring earth greener hues. Lightning flashes through the heavy air, rending it with blinding light and thunderous swells, which press against the inner drums of my still ears. Have you forgotten the grace of having wetness rain about your face? Of watching greenness sprout, bursting through the earth beneath your mud-caked feet? And for as far as the eye can see, lush fields abound, and rainbows span the distant hills. I would be for you rain, insistent, persistent, yet intermittent. Too much would swell the nearby waters, flood your fruit-laden fields, laying them to waste. And drought has kinder hands. Life stirs to be born again. The waters usher in flowers and grain. I would be for you rain. This poem is by poet Michael S. Harper, entitled The Love Letters of Helen Pitts Douglas. When I stood behind his desk chair, and when he sat, on rare occasions, on the porch, Sage of Anacostia, they called him, I smelled his mane glorious, and as a hand saddle, the aroma of hair took me to neckline and below. In Egypt, long after Napoleon had shot off the face of the Sphinx, I thought of this man, and the cusp of his palms on my shoulder blades. As always, he was carrying the mail of gender, his touch immaculate in the true blend of the cortex and of the complex, risen on the pulpit, and after the hot air, wintry parlance, the syllables of my name in his ear, when he touched me as he had touched me then. I had my suspicions of English ladies, actresses, ghosts of the Thames, concubines, as we had been into this next century, and they had their wiles with him. I do not feel forbidden. The cameo ring he gave me, recession of his maleness, all I need, and the highlights of my dark profile, any children we might have had buried in architecture, and the hate of his daughter Rosetta, who I have spoken to over the grate. The sun rises and sets in our neighborhood. I will burn these. But when I place my fingers in that mane, it is to the saddle he will come. This poem is by poet Nikki Finney, entitled Concerto No. 7, Condoleezza Working Out at the Watergate. Condoleezza rises at 4, stepping on the treadmill. Her long fingers brace the two slim handles of accommodating steel. She steadies her sleepy legs for the long day ahead. She doesn't get very far. Her knees buckle, wanting back last night's dream. Dream number 9. She is 15 and leaning forward from the bench, playing Mozart's piano concerto in D minor, alone, before the gawking, disbelieving, applauding crowd. Not dream number 2. She is 9, and not in the church that explodes into dust, the heart pine floor giving way beneath her friend Denise, rocketing her up into the air like a jack-in-the-box of a black girl, wrapped in a Dixie cross. She ups the speed on the treadmill, remembering she has to be 3 times as good. Don't mix up your dreams, Condi. She runs faster, back to the right, finally hitting her stride. Mozart returns to her side. She is 15 again, all smiles, all relocated to the peaks of the Rocky Mountains, where she and the Steinway are the only black people in the room. This last poem is by poet Ross Gay and is entitled Burial. You're right, you're right. The fertilizer's good. It wasn't a gang of dullards came up with the chucking of a fish into the planting hole, or some midwife got lucky with the placenta. Oh, I'll plant a tree here. and a sudden flash of quince and jam enough for months. Yes, the magic dust our bodies become casts spell on the roots about which someone else could tell you the chemical processes, but it's just magic to me. Which is why a couple springs ago, when first putting in my two bare root plum trees out back, I took the jar which has become my father's house, and lonely for him, and hoping to coax him back for my mother as much as me, poured some of him into the planting holes, and he dove in glad for the robust air, settling a slight gust into my nose and mouth, chuckling as I coughed, but mostly he disappeared into the minor yawns in the earth, into which I placed the trees, splaying wide their roots, casting the gray dust of my old man even throughout the hole, replacing the clods of dense Indiana soil until the roots and my father were buried, watering it in all with one hand while holding the tree with the other, straight as the flag, to the nation of simple joy, of which my father is now a naturalized citizen, waving the flag from his subterranean lair, the roots curled around him like shawls or jungle gyms, like hookahs or the arms of ancestors, before breaststroking into the xylem, riding the elevator up through the cambium and into the leaves, where when you put your ear close enough, you can hear him whisper, "Good morning." And where, if you close your eyes and you push your face, you can feel his stubbly jowls. And good Lord, this year he was giddy at the first real fruit set and nestled into the 30 or 40 plums in the two trees, peering out from the sweet meat with his hands pressed against the purple skin like cathedral glass. And imagine his joy as the sun wizarded forth those abundant sugars, and I plodded barefoot and prayerful at the first ripe plums swell and blush, almost weepy, conjuring some surely ponderous verse to convey this bottomless grace. You know, oh father, kind of stuff. Hundreds of hot air balloons filling the sky in my chest, replacing his intubated body, listing like a boat keelside up, replacing the steady stream of water from one eye, which his brother wiped before removing the tube, keeping his hand on the forehead until the last wind of his body wandered off, while my brother wailed like an animal, and my mother said, weeping, it's okay, you can go, honey. At all of which my father guffawed by kicking from the first bite buckets of juice down my chin, staining one of my two button-down shirts, the salmon-colored one, hollering, there's more of that, almost dancing now in the plum, in the tree, the way he did as a person, bent over and biting his lip, and chucking that one hip out, then the other, with his elbows cocked and fists loosely made, and eyes closed and mouth made trumpet, when he knew he could make you happy just by being a little silly and sweet.